And that's really where any parent, no matter what age you're dealing with, that's where we get into bad habits or sleep associations, is because everybody's tired and we're just looking for the fastest way to get our baby or toddler back to sleep.
You've heard the saying, never wake a sleeping baby. But does that apply to toddlers? And what about the age-old conundrum of when to stop daytime naps? Is it when your little one says so, or should we persevere through the tantrums? Katie Borzikas is a certified sleep coach and founder of Well-Rested Wee Ones, and their mission is to get little ones and their parents sleeping better, moving from tired to well-rested. And as a mom of two with another one on the way, well, that sounds pretty good to me. So let's dive into today's discussion and decide if we should really let sleeping toddlers lie or not. So Katie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to dive into the world of toddler sleep as many parents see the changes emerge around that 2, 3, and 4-year-old timeframe.
Yeah, it's a fabulous one. And I understand you're also a mom of two, but you have more than 15 years experience as a certified pediatric nurse practitioner and now many years as a certified sleep coach and breastfeeding counselor. You've got all the tools, and I just know that today you're going to have all the answers for us around toddler sleep. So can you tell me a bit about your background and how you came to be a sleep coach?
Yes, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, I have many years of experience working as a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I've always loved working with children. But outside of my love of working with children, I've always had a passion for sleep. Many years ago, as a teenager and young child, my mom purposely enrolled me in the afternoon kindergarten class because I loved to sleep in, and I was the first one that wanted to go to bed at any kind of slumber party. So I've never been much of a night owl and always prioritized my sleep. But as I became pregnant and came into new motherhood, I realized how much sleep is such a focus for new parents, and there's so much anxiety and questioning of how do I get my baby to sleep even when we thought it was going to come easily. And so I went through personal struggles myself with my first child of navigating sleep deprivation, and what that transcended to was even more of a love for sleep and education for myself and my friends. And after I had my second child, just 21 months later, sleep was of an utmost priority for the whole family. And that's when I started navigating the world of educating sleep outside of just myself and my friends. And I came across a consulting opportunity with a popular company in the US that has a sound machine and nightlight. And they were developing an app for parents to ask questions to experts. And over 75% of the questions every day were sleep-related questions. And so about a year and a half later, that app decided to not move forward with providing that service anymore, but I knew I wanted to continue to be able to help families with sleep. And so that's really when the start of Well-Rested Wee Ones emerged. And I took it upon myself to educate myself on starting a business and marketing, but outside of that, also just even more sleep education and feeding education. And that's when I started Well Rested Wee Ones in the fall of 2019. And really what started as a local business and something that I was connecting with friends and pediatricians and word of mouth referrals, quickly within the first 6 months turned into a nationwide and a worldwide known business because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Parents were stuck at home, and yeah. I was posting on social media daily about sleep. And I've always loved social media and connection there. And soon enough, I was connecting with families and helping families with sleep all across the world and was being sought out for sleep resources.
That's fantastic. That's really great. And I know firsthand how anxiety creating, you know, sleeping is, particularly with difficult sleepers. My first Olive was a terrible sleeper and to this day still is. But whereas my son, a wonderful sleeper, he puts his head on the pillow and off he goes. There's no issue with him at all. But it definitely creates a number of challenges for many parents. But tell me this, Katie, what are some of the most common sleep challenges that parents encounter with toddlers in particular?
Sure. So we have an evolution of sleep as we go into toddlerhood, because what happens with toddlers is we have toddlers that are testing boundaries. They have different sleep needs in comparison to infants. And so what we find is we see new stalling at bedtime and nap time. We see new resistance because toddlers don't need quite as much daytime sleep compared to an infant. And so we see new challenges with routines and getting our toddlers to sleep and accept sleep, because very commonly they have what I describe as FOMO, which is fear of missing out. And so we have to establish very strong routines and really draw our line in the sand with our boundaries, because if we give our toddler an inch, they're going to take a mile when it comes to navigating those sleep routines. And so that's where many parents may get frustrated or exhausted by new tantrums or new stalling mechanisms that their toddlers are testing them night after night, and they are looking for support and guidance on how to navigate those new transitions.
And what is your, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously thinking back a few years now, but, you know, I certainly remember as they got a little bit older into toddlerhood, you know, that resistance obviously became, you know, more apparent. When as a parent with your child, do you know if those sort of afternoon sleeps or those midday sleeps or morning sleeps are, they've sort of done with it? What are the, how do you start to measure that or understand when you could perhaps start cutting those extra daytime sleeps out to perhaps get a better night's sleep at the end of the day at nighttime? It was a big question for
me. Yes. Well, many parents, they don't want to give up the nap. You know, the nap is such a crucial time during the day for us to rest or to catch up on tasks throughout the day. And so that is, it's a critical time for us as a parent, but also as the toddler, on what they really need with their nap. And so I've seen toddlers as early as age 2 to 2.5 be ready to drop their nap, but the majority are more in that 3 to 4 year old age range. And so what we tend to find is that we're going to see toddlers who just, no matter what we do or no matter what time we put them down for their nap, they just are not going to sleep. They're going to play in their room or in their crib. They're going to call out for us. They may cry or yell, or they may throw a tantrum. And so what I'm looking for to determine if a toddler is really ready is, how does this impact the rest of their day, and how does it impact their overnight sleep? Sometimes we're holding on to that nap as a parent almost selfishly because we don't want to give it up. But what we find is that bedtime starts getting pushed later and later and later, or a toddler's morning wake up time creeps earlier and earlier and earlier, because we're looking at sleep as a pie. And if we're getting too much daytime sleep, then it chips away at our overnight sleep portion. And so we're trying to balance that out. And sometimes we'll have phases where a toddler will refuse naps for a couple weeks or a month or two, but then they go right back to napping. And so there are times where that may happen, but generally speaking, we're looking at just the overall affect of the toddler during the day. How does it impact their overnight sleep? And are we having any resistance there?
And is it easier to train a baby in sleep, like sleep training, versus a toddler? Because I think back to Olive, and we did a couple of weeks stays at a place in Australia called Tresillian because she was a terrible sleeper. Learning more now about sleep, perhaps I was doing it all wrong, I'm not sure. But nonetheless, we ended up there, and they were, you know, she was only 5-6 months old at the time, or 8 months old. I can't remember what it was. But I also remember there were parents there with toddlers. And I remember asking one of the nurses there, you know, what's easier? Is it better to get them younger and teach them how to, you know, sleep better and learn how to get back to sleep? Or is it, you know, harder when they're a toddler? What's your advice? Is it better to catch it early, or does it not matter? Or is it better? Is it not?
There are big differences when you look at sleep training a baby versus a toddler, because toddlers are aware of what's going on. They can vocalize their wants and needs, and you're going to see potentially more resistance when it comes to making changes because the patterns and habits have been in place for longer. So it's never too late to, quotation, sleep train your toddler if you've had some habits in place that you're wanting to change. But you will find that babies in particular between 4 and 6 months are going to be the fastest to adapt to change, just because they haven't developed object permanence yet, meaning they know you exist even when they can't see you. And we're not dealing with a lot of other major motor milestones, and we haven't had habits in place for long periods of time. So when it comes to toddlers, I tend to focus a lot on preparation before we implement any actual changes. And we do a lot of visuals to help guide them through routines. We do a lot of role playing. I use some videos to help motivate them as a sleep teacher, because many are in some sort of setting where they have a teacher, as such as a preschool setting or a primary school setting. And so they love to please their teachers. And so that's where it could be really powerful and empowering as the parent to utilize those tools to empower their toddler that they can do these things. And they will adapt, but it may just take a couple of weeks longer in comparison to an infant.
That's really interesting. And you know, what are those sort of, you know, the right time to consider sleep training a toddler? And I mean, in your opinion, what are some of those effective strategies that parents can easily implement?
Well, there's two sides to look at that. I'm looking at whether or not a toddler is still sleeping in a crib or not. Some toddlers between ages 18 months to 3 years are still sleeping in a crib, and that will go much quicker than if you have a toddler that's sleeping in a bed. And the reason behind that is because a crib is a boundary. And when we're looking at toddlers up to age 3, if they're sleeping in a bed prior to age 3, their frontal lobe, they just cannot process what an imaginary boundary is. And they will repetitively get out of the bed. They're going to have lots of requests. You may have to walk them back multiple times at bedtime or overnight, or they may wake up early in the morning and just waltz out of their room. And so when I'm looking at that, that's more of a safety issue. So if we can catch them while they're still in their crib, I think that's more of a primary golden time when it comes to sleep training a toddler. But I work with many toddlers who are sleeping in a bed. And again, it does take a lot more time, patience, practice, and consistency on the parent's part to establish those new routines and really those boundaries that we've gotten away from. And so that's where parents, if we're tired and exhausted, it's so hard to stick with that night after night, especially if you have a toddler that's really pressing your buttons or pushing the boundaries per se, because all we want to do is go to sleep, and we're looking for the fastest way to do that. And that's really where any parent, no matter what age you're dealing with, that's where we get into bad habits or sleep associations, is because everybody's tired and we're just looking for the fastest way to get our baby or toddler back to sleep. But inevitably, that becomes a new habit or association that we have to do to get them to sleep, and it can cause multiple wake-ups or resistance with bedtime or naps.
Yes, I can relate, because I was that person who would just then put my child into bed with me.
Right.
my kids still sleep with me. I think as a result, it's like, everybody sleep. Just doesn't matter where you sleep, just sleep. But and I did. We were talking earlier about the Super Nanny. I think it was the TV show that used to be on. And I remember vividly one show that I watched, and they were trying to train a toddler to sleep. And they were trying to get it to the little, I think it was a little boy, to get back to sleep 86 times. This little boy hopped out of bed.
Oh my goodness. That is exhausting.
Don't you think? And then they put a camera in the room, obviously, and they just watched this little toddler hopping. The mother would walk out, the toddler would walk back out 86 times before this toddler finally went to sleep. I was like, hats off to that mother, I tell you, because I would have just lost it by that stage. But it is exhausting sometimes, like you say, isn't it? I mean, the persistence and the patience piece. You quickly lose, you know, those sort of qualities at, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, don't you, when this child's really pressing your buttons?
Right. Whether it's 10 o'clock or 2 a.m. or 5
a.m., you know, that is such a hard thing to do if they're repetitively getting out of bed and they're not listening. And it's hard to reason at that time with anybody, no matter how old you are. And we ourselves, our sleep drive is so high in the middle of the night, all we want to do is go back to bed. And so that's where the consistency part is really hard. And as a sleep coach, that's what we're there to really guide parents on and motivate them and continue to tell them that they're doing great and that their toddler can do this, so that everybody can get back to their good sleeping patterns.
It's like the golden, ticket, isn't it? But tell me, I mean, just from a basic point of view, Katie, what is the average or the recommended sleep durations for a toddler? And what are those, you know, how do they change, you know, as they sort of grow up into, you know, tweenhood and teenhood? What do those sort of hours look like?
So yes, we do see a shift with toddler sleep needs. So
the toddlers are going to generally need less daytime sleep and less overall sleep if you look at the 24-hour spectrum. So around age 2 to 2.5 is when we start to see a little bit of a shift there. And so what we're looking at prior for an infant is anywhere from 11 to 12 hours of overnight sleep. And now we're shifting more to anywhere from 10 to 12 hours of sleep overnight. And that is really dependent on whether a toddler is still napping or not. A toddler that's still napping will probably be on the lower end of the overnight spectrum, compared to a toddler that's not napping will be on the higher end of that spectrum of overnight sleep.
Interesting. Because I don't think any of my children slept for 10 to 11 hours overnight. Is there anybody out there whose children do? If so, I want to hear from you. What are you doing? That's amazing. And how important is that? I mean, how important is that to their development? I mean, obviously it's huge, but you know, when they're getting those 10 to 11 hours sleep, what is the difference between that and a child that's only sort of getting 9 to 10 hours sleep at that age range?
Sleep is so important for development and for learning and for mood, behavior, affect, appetite. There's a lot of hormonal regulation that is it tied with sleep. And so when we're looking at how much sleep any child, infant, toddler, primary school age child, we're looking at total amount of sleep. And that first half of the night is the deepest and most restorative sleep for all humans. So we hit much deeper stages of sleep. Our brain goes through some cleaning processes for processing memories, and it helps us feel refreshed and restored for the next day. So if we are pushing bedtime too late, even if a toddler were to still get a proper amount, quotation, of sleep, they still may not be as refreshed the next morning because they missed out on some of that good quality deep sleep in the first half of the night. And that's why that early bedtime is still so advantageous for school age children and toddlers and preschool age children. Really, I'm aiming for somewhere between 7 and 8 p.m. at the latest for these kiddos, because they have so much they have to put into school to learn and to pay attention. And when you're not getting good quality sleep, that directly impacts their mood and behavior. And teachers say that day after day, they can tell the kids that don't get enough sleep at home.
Yeah, well, I can talk firsthand to that because my partner's two children, when I met him, had his kids to 8 and 6, I think, or 8 and 5 at the time, weren't going to bed till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I was like, what? Even that's too late for me. These kids should be in bed by 7:30. So we started bringing them down. So like they're 7:30 now into bed, 8 o'clock at the latest. And they're different kids in the morning. They're just bright and bubbly tail, you know, bushy tailed. And it's a, you know, significant change in their overall disposition. They're always very happy during the day, but that, you know, those first couple of hours in the morning, they're like groggy and grumpy, and phenomenal to see a change when they actually do get to bed at a proper hour.
Agreed completely. There are certainly, once your kiddos get a little bit older, you know, we have more events, we tend to be a little more flexible with taking them out. But you will see the direct impact the next day on that later bedtime. And so, you know, I love having that flexibility with my own children now, who are now 5 and 6, but that is a once a week type of event. And by no means would they be able to tolerate it every night, because the next day after we spend time with friends on a Friday or Saturday evening, the next day we pay the price with their mood and behavior being impacted. So that's why that early bedtime of the time is so advantageous for our young children.
Absolutely. And I suppose just moving back to obviously toddlers again, and as we said, it can be a little difficult getting them down for their nap schedule. But, you know, if parents are trying to establish a sort of a consistent nap schedule, a schedule and ensure their child gets that adequate daytime sleep, what's the advice that you give to parents to establish a good daytime sleep routine for their toddler?
As far as naps go for toddlers, we need them to expend a lot of energy in the morning before their nap. Toddlers need to be spending up to 3 hours of active playtime during the day and only up to 1 hour of static sitting around, quotation, relaxation time. So I look at the morning as the time to be outside as much as possible, being exposed to sunlight, making sure that we're feeding them lunch, their midday meal before their nap, and then allowing anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes between lunch and nap to start to wind down. And we all tend to hit a bit of a lull in the early afternoon where our temperature drops. And so that actually is advantageous for naps as well for toddlers. And so if we can find that little sweet spot, usually between 12 and 2 to fall asleep, then they're more willing to accept the sleep, even if they feel like they might be missing out on something.
That's really good advice. Yes, I hadn't actually thought about that, getting them out in the morning, the music classes or running around the park or something is probably the perfect time to do it, isn't it? Because usually in the morning, you just get up and try and clean the house and get your mm-hmm. life together. And it's usually the afternoon that you kind of start planning for kind of, you know, the afternoon out or day trips or things. But no, that's fantastic advice. And then, Katie, what about nighttime? You know, obviously, we talked about before that child at 86 times, he was up and about trying to get to sleep. But you know, nighttime wakings are also incredibly common among toddlers. What is your advice to parents around how they can handle these waking times?
If we're seeing multiple wake-ups overnight, then we usually need to look back at how our toddler is falling asleep at bedtime and what their daytime schedule is. Because generally speaking, we shouldn't be seeing multiple wake-ups unless there's something else that's directly impacting them, whether they're looking for a parent to help them fall back asleep, meaning sleep initiation. That's what we're looking at with the bedtime routine and ensuring that a toddler is falling asleep on their own, eyes wide open, and that they're not reliant on a parent to lay right next to them the whole time they fall asleep or to be touching them or to be holding them and transferring them, because that's what they're going to seek out in the middle of the night if they happen to wake up. And then also when we look at that schedule throughout the day to make sure they're not getting too much daytime sleep. Again, as we look back at those toddler sleep needs and the shifting needs of the daytime sleep, because if they're getting too much daytime sleep, then they'll start to wake more often overnight and seek out a parent. Just because they don't know what else to do and they don't know what time it is. They have no concept of time. So why not go find mom or dad and let them know that they're awake?
Yeah. And so what is that appropriate daytime sleep? So, you know, sort of that early toddler kind of 18 months to 24 versus sort of a 2 to a 4 year old. What would you advise is a good amount of hours of daytime sleep for a child that doesn't impact their nighttime sleep?
18 to 24 months, we could see anywhere from, I would say the average is approximately 2 to 2.5 hours of daytime sleep. It could be as little as 1 to 1.5 hours. So you're looking at a pretty wide range of normal for that age group. Once we get into that 2.5 and beyond age, then I'm starting to really taper down on nap, usually 1 to 1.5 hours maximum. And we also need to make sure that the nap isn't ending too late in the afternoon, because they still need adequate amount of awake time before bed. So I would generally tell a family that the nap would need to end by 3 o'clock in order to maintain bedtime no later than 8 p.m. So even if they were resisting a nap and they didn't fall asleep for some reason until 2 or 2:30, we still need to wake them by 3 so that they have enough awake time before bed so that their body can build that sleep pressure to accept sleep and to fall asleep and sleep all night.
Oh, that's it. That's the question we're here to answer, isn't it? Do we wake a sleeping toddler? So the answer is yes, if it's past 3 o'clock. And tell me, you mentioned obviously earlier that you were working with a sleep app and things like that. I mean, I found the, particularly sort of in later on with the kids, turning on the sleep meditation or the sleep books and what have you to be incredibly helpful for my kids in terms of falling asleep. Is that something that you advocate, or are you more of a keep the room nice and quiet and, you know, dark and what have you? What's your advice? Are there any tools mm-hmm. or, you know, third party things that we can help or utilize to help our kids get to sleep better?
I love meditation. I love stories. And I think those are great tools to use as part of a bedtime routine, but I don't recommend utilizing that in order to initiate sleep. So we would want to turn those things off once we end our routine so that we can fall asleep independently. So listening to that meditation and going through that process of our body relaxing and winding down, or listening to a calming story, is fantastic. I definitely do not recommend any screens, ideally 2 hours before bedtime, and absolutely within 1 hour of bedtime, we want those turned off. So if we're utilizing anything, we just want to make sure that it's separate and part of the bedtime routine, but that everything is turned off and that we say our goodnights and I love yous and hugs and kisses, and that the toddler can fall asleep without needing one of those things to actually be on to fall asleep.
Okay, that's good advice. I'm usually lying with them and fall asleep too, so I have no idea what happens thereafter. But anyway, tell me this as well. We talked about before, obviously, toddlers in cribs and toddlers in bed. I mean, that transition from a crib to a toddler is quite a big milestone for a parent, I think, more so than probably a child. You know, what is your what is your advice for parents who are considering moving their child from the crib to a bed?
Many parents are very excited to move their child from a crib to a bed. And they usually do it at a birthday milestone is a common time, or when a new sibling may be arriving soon, is they make the decision that they should just go ahead and take their baby out of the crib, because they're still a baby, out of the crib and move them to a bed. And so my general piece of advice there is I try and hold on to the crib and utilize the crib until age 3 or after. And that goes back to the processing and being able to understand the imaginary boundary, because many parents who have made the transition before age 3 to a bed end up with, let's say they had a great sleeper before who no bedtime resistance and slept through the night, and all of a sudden we have them in the bed and bedtime has now turned into a 2-hour event every night and they're getting out of bed multiple times. So if we can hold on to that crib until at least age 3 or after, we'll see far fewer problems when it comes to sleep. And they have a little bit more rationalization about understanding the concept of staying in bed and the importance that they can't just meander and wander around the home in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And is it true as well, just another kind of question from Lesfield, is it true that some kids are just better sleepers than others? Like, is it the case that some people, as we kind of wired, just are wired for sleep and others aren't? The reason I ask that is because I'm a twin. Sure. And I do not sleep. I exist on very little sleep and sleep very lightly, whereas my twin sister, you could literally put a bomb out and she would still sleep. And she would sleep all night without interruption, whereas, you know, I don't. And that was from a very young, like that was from birth. So I wonder, are we wired differently? Is there a chemical difference? What makes one child a better sleeper than the other?
Well, the need to sleep is biological, but the way we sleep is learned. So when we look at, for example, you and your twin, we also look at chemical differences, genetic differences. So there's this bell curve of sleep. So we have the majority of our sleepers are going to fall into the bell of how much sleep they need. But then we have our outliers as we go down on each side of the bell with less sleep needs and higher sleep needs. And so I work with that every day to find what's that magic amount of sleep that your baby or toddler needs in the 24-hour period to function, to eat well, and that they're at their best happy baby mood, and parents too. So it varies quite a bit. You know, the average would be 14 to 15 hours for a baby from 0 to 12 months in a 24-hour spectrum, but there's certainly some that are only getting 12 to 13 hours, and then there's some that are getting 15 to 16 hours. So they're all very different.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And again, you know, probably you saw with your two children, one probably slept better than the other. My son was definitely a better sleeper than Olive ever was. But Katie, one other question I had for you was just around, we've talked in previous podcasts around the importance of diet and sleep as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on foods that can help a toddler to sleep? Because if somebody told me years ago that bananas would help Olive to sleep, I perhaps would have fed her them day and night. But is there a relationship between food and sleep? And if there is, what is the advice that you'd give to parents around around what they're feeding their children to perhaps get a better night's sleep?
There are certainly some foods that are marketed to help sleep, but you would have to take pretty significant amounts of them for it to directly be the one thing that helps your toddler sleep. So I don't rely upon specific foods to make sleep better for a family. I certainly review a toddler's diet and see what they're eating day to day. And if we're not getting proper amount of protein or a variety of fruits, vegetables, carbohydrates, and proteins, then we want to look back at that. But generally speaking, I'm not advocating for this one food before bed to get your toddler to sleep through the night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a shame. I thought that might be a magic bullet.
No magic food out there.
What a shame. I suppose the other question that keeps going, and probably you know, important as we sort of head into the festive season in the next couple of months, can't believe it's November, but you know, obviously holidays typically are when you're single and, you know, free and kid-free, it's an exciting time, and then you suddenly have children and holidays become quite stressful. And particularly because you know that obviously you're disrupting the routines and the patterns. You might be going to different time zones, or you're dealing with all the complications that come with that. What's the best advice, or how can we best deal with holiday situations and making sure our children get to sleep on the holiday, but also when you return back to routine, what's your advice in making sure they get back mm-hmm. seamlessly into that nice routine that you may have established before you went away?
Before we go on holiday, we want our toddlers as well rested as possible. So prioritize sleep for that 1 to 2 weeks before travel or before a holiday or before big gatherings. That's going to help them get through those days that are off schedule. And so when we are away from home, we know the routines are different. The environment is different. There's a lot of new stimulation that makes it hard to wind down and accept sleep. And that's where we tend to see a lot more resistance with falling asleep. And we revert to doing whatever we can to get them to fall asleep. And many will fall into a state of sleep debt if you're away from home for the holidays, whether it's for 2 or 3 days or a week or two, because our whole schedule is off. And so in those situations, we want to prioritize as much as possible that good environment that's conducive to sleep and making sure they have a safe sleep environment and allowing enough time to wind down from events and big gatherings that our bodies can actually accept sleep, because nobody can go from party or play straight to sleep. And that's where we don't always account for that when we're trying to get our baby or toddler to sleep after a holiday event. And then when we get back, we really want to focus on that first few days of early bedtimes, naps at home, getting back onto that routine that we had established before if we've created new habits while away, so that we don't revert and continue to have to do those things once we're back at home. And many will get back on track within 3 to 7 days of being back at home. We actually have a new travel guide that we're going to be releasing that answers many of those questions in much more detail as well.
Very good. Very good. And I have to ask you this question. How is it that a toddler won't sleep when it's in the house, but if it goes to daycare, that it will literally sleep on the floor with all the noise and light and sounds of children and banging things, will sleep peacefully like that, but won't sleep, take an afternoon nap at a bed at home? Is there any explanation for that? It always astounds me.
Yes, that is the luxury of peer pressure. Uh-huh. So when we are surrounded by our friends who are all doing the same thing, we want to follow suit as a toddler. And we all lay down for our nap after we've had our lunch and we have our cot and our blankie and we all fall asleep. And so when we're at home as a toddler, we don't have all of our friends there taking a nap at the same time, mom or dad or whatever caregiver has put us in our crib or bed. And now we're alone. And why would we go to sleep when I know they're out there doing other things? So that's where it's a very common question from toddler parents is, why can't I get my toddler to sleep at home? But they will easily accept a nap any day they go to daycare or school.
I know. I used to be like, I was like, what are they spraying on these children? You'd walk in there all just asleep on the floor. I was like, what magic are they, you know, have they got here with these teachers? And just a final question, Katie, in terms of that routine, so that daytime sleep and even nighttime sleep, you know, we hear differing opinions around, you know, the environment. You know, most people talk around having a dark environment and shutting the windows and pulling the blinds and making it all very dark. And others like, no, they should be able to sleep in the light. And what's your advice in terms of best environment to create for toddlers to get that daytime and perhaps even nighttime sleep now that we're heading into daylight savings?
Sure. Research shows that we all sleep best when we're in a dark room, whether it's daytime or nighttime. So we always want to prioritize that dark room with blackout shades. Some sort of ambient noise helps many of us sleep better, whether you're using a fan, brown noise, pink noise, or white noise. And then establishing that consistent time and the routine helps tremendously. And when it comes to sleep, if we're away from home, if you've only been used to sleeping in a dark environment, your sleep drive will take over and you'll still fall asleep even if you have a nap on the go. And that's where many parents worry that having their toddler always sleep in a dark room will not allow them to sleep on the go. But they still will accept sleep because their sleep drive just takes over at a certain point. And so when you're at home, that's why prioritizing the best sleep environment is always the best way to approach sleep.
Oh, that's good advice. That one always confused me. So I'm glad I asked that question. And Katie, my final one to you for today is this. How is your sleep these days? As an avid sleeper, how are you going these days?
I love sleep. I get great sleep most nights. I go to bed fairly early. And I do find that if I push my limits and I try and stay up a bit later than my normal bedtime, is that my sleep quality goes down quite a bit. I have a harder time falling asleep and I'm more restless. And so that ties back just the same with infants and toddlers, is establishing that consistent bedtime in your routine. And even if you stray from that, you may see sleep changes. And I know that sounds very rigid, but our bodies are meant for routines and patterns, and our brain works really well when we do those things. And so if you can follow that, you'll end up getting the best sleep. And that's what I try and do the majority of the time. I'm not perfect by any means, but I do love my sleep.
I'm very jealous. I got to ask you one personal question. If I keep waking up at 2 or at least 3 o'clock every single morning without fail, I wake up and I cannot go back to sleep for about 2 hours. Do you have any tips for me? And it has nothing to do with it had nothing to do with my pregnancy. It's just been it's been probably more or less since I had my first children. I just have always, my circadian rhythm now just seems to wake me at 2 or 3 o'clock, and I lay there for a couple of hours and then I can read the paper and then I fall back to sleep. But I would like to think wouldn't it be great to get a full night's sleep? Not that that's going to happen in a couple of months' time, but nonetheless, it'd be good to learn.
I would look at your morning wake up time and your bedtime, and then do you tend to nap to make up for that during the day?
Love a daytime nap. Love a daytime nap.
So what happens is when a pattern like this emerges, is we start to compensate and we may nap during the day to make up for that because we're exhausted. But then that just turns into a cycle in and of itself, is that now we've taken a nap. So now we don't have as much sleep drive. And so then we're more likely to wake up the next night. I will say, though, that that type of pattern can become habitual very quickly, and very similar with babies and toddlers, is you can get into a habitual waking pattern. So then you have to start looking at, what do you do when you wake up at 2 a.m.? Whether you're truly just laying there or if you're getting bored and doing other activities, then that can also impact, because that's telling your brain, giving it the signal that even though you're tired and you want to go back to sleep, that there's other things that are happening that are going to prevent you from falling back to sleep. So that would be the first line that I'd be looking down before diving in deeper.
Gotcha. I still blame my mother. I always remember as not a toddler, but probably 4 or 5, we always had an afternoon nap at the three of us, Felicity, my mother and I. And I still blame, not blame, not that's the wrong word, but I still put my liking for an afternoon nap down to that routine from when I was four or five. I'm sure of it. I just used to love it so much. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. Katie, this has been such a great chat. And there's been a number of these things I've been dying to sort of just sort out in terms of the black room and the light and things like that. So it's been such a fabulous discussion. And I'm really grateful for your time today. Tell me, for our listeners, how can they get in touch with you and stay connected?
Absolutely. You can find all of my sleep resources on wellrestedweones.com. I'm very active on social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, under wellrestedweones. I like to post entertaining reels, stories with tips every day, and just relatable parenthood when it comes to the early years of sleep and feeding. So you can find me on all those platforms. And we have online courses that are available worldwide. We have one-on-one coaching, and we have downloadable guides as well, and tons of free tips on our blog.
I'll be there. In a couple of years, I'll be your number one fan, Katie. I just know it. But thank you so much for your time today. And thank you so much for joining us on this little episode of This Little Life. We hope you found our discussion today as enlightening and valuable as I did. And if you'd like to stay up to date on our latest episodes and receive notifications about future releases, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review and share this podcast with your loved ones. Your feedback and support mean the absolute world to us. And as always, if you have any suggestions for future topics or guests, feel free to reach out to us on our socials. You'll find us at The Little Oak Company. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. And until next time, take care and take some time to enjoy this little life.